When I was a kid growing up in Jersey, anybody who was a hoot or really funny or something, we'd call him a riot. Ladies and gents, this guy's a riot in more ways than one. Bob Dylan.
I was thinking of a series of dreams where nothing comes up to the top. Everything stays down where it's wounded and comes to a permanent stop. Wasn't thinking of anything specific, like in a dream when someone wakes up and screams. Nothing too very scientific, just thinking of a series of dreams. This is Pod Dylan, the show that celebrates the work of Bob Dylan one song at a time. I'm your host, freewheeling Rob Kelly. And of course, this is our final episode of Pod Dylan, at least in its current form. We'll talk about that a little bit later. But I thought for this final show, it would only be appropriate to finally get to what I have often said on the show is my favorite Bob Dylan song of all time, which is Series of Dreams, which is, of course, an outtake from 1989's Oh Mercy, and then got released on the bootleg series volumes 1 to 3 in March of 1991. And, you know, when I say my favorite Bob Dylan song, I mean, it always seems to sort of suggest that other songs, you know, like they're lesser than, and they're not, you know, I mean, I love almost everything the man's ever done. That's why I became a Bobcat. That's why I did this show. But it's one of those things where I'm like, if I ever just had to pick one, if someone ever just said to me, like if Bob Dylan ever encountered me and buttonholed me and said, name me your favorite song, I would never want to lie to him. So I always think this is the song. And I've mentioned in previous episodes, you know, why I've never gotten to it. And I've always said, oh, it's because I'm so close to it that I feel like I can't do justice to it without revealing too much of myself. I'm a little high. I was being a little highfalutin then. I think it was more about that when I was still thinking the show, you know, was an ongoing concern, it would feel weird to cover my all-time favorite song and then keep going after that. You know, what am I going to talk about? They killed him after A Series of Dreams. So it always just felt like I should just leave my favorite song till the very end. Well, we're at the very end. I don't have a guest with me for this final episode. I originally wanted to have a guest because that's what the show is, was me and a guest or guests talking about a Bob Dylan song. But my brother and Bob, Jason MD, said to me he thought that the final show talking about Series of Dreams should be me by myself. And even though the couple of shows I've done where it was just me are not my favorites because then it's a monologue, not a dialogue, Jason is a very smart man, much smarter than I. And so I was like, well, if Jason thinks that's the appropriate thing to do, you know, let me give this a try. And it made sense. This is, you know, it's my show, so I guess it should end with me. But if by the time we get to the end of this, if you find that you don't like this episode, you don't like that it's just me talking about the song, please blame Jason. So, okay, as I mentioned, Series of Dreams was originally recorded for Oh Mercy. The recording of it consists of a couple different sessions. There was one initial session early on in Oh Mercy where I think Bob recorded some separate vocal tracks with no backing musicians. Again, we'll talk about that shortly. And then later on, around March 23rd, 1989, is when he recorded it with the actual musicians, which I think resulted in yet another vocal session. And then, you know, Bob ended up leaving it off the album. He does mention Series of Dreams in Chronicles, and he says, quote, although Daniel Lanois liked the song, he liked the bridge better, and he wanted the whole song to be like that. I knew what he meant, but it just couldn't be done, though I thought about it for a second, thinking that I could probably start with the bridge as the main part and use the main part as the bridge. The idea didn't amount to much, and thinking about the song this way wasn't healthy. I felt like it was fine the way it was. I didn't want to lose myself in thinking too much about changing it. You know, Bob going to be Bob. Apparently, Lanois liked the song so much that he suggested it should have been the opening track, which really would have been something to think the opening the record with this. And, you know, when I first heard it on the bootleg series, it became I instantly loved it. It's so unusual. It's the whole sound is, while fitting in with Lanois' sort of soundscape that he was working on for Oh Mercy and later for A Time and a Mind, it still doesn't sound like a typical Bob Dylan song. And it's one of the reasons I love it so much is that it's just, it is so unique. Yes, Bob is there with the musicians and they're recording live as he liked to do. But of course, there are overdubs later on. And that's just very unusual. There aren't that many Bob Dylan overdubs. That was something, that's not something he really liked doing. He liked doing it live in the studio and that was it. And when I heard it, I always thought, oh man, this is one of these songs that Bob should have put on an album. You know, it's a masterpiece. How did this not end up making a Mercy? And it become, you know, it joins that list of great songs that Bob Dylan left off a record, whether it's Blind Willie McTell or Caribbean Wind or Up to Me or She's Your Lover Now or Lay Down Your Weary Tune. Just last week, I talked about Tattle O'Day, I think absolutely belongs on that list. And so for years, I was just, you know, why would Bob leave this off? And by the time iTunes came around and you could make playlists, I would make my own Oh Mercy version and would stick this on there. Later on, I would add Dignity as well. But I always felt like Oh Mercy, as great as that record is, really missed an opportunity to not have the song on it. Now, of course, over time, I have come to realize that the version on the bootleg series never could have appeared on Oh Mercy, because that version with the extra synths and the, what sounds like to me, maybe even backup singers doing the sound, like the chorus kind of thing, that was added later. That was added for the bootleg series release. And so none of that was ever part of the Oh Mercy sessions. It was only added later for the bootleg series. So the version that's on the bootleg series only really exists to be on the bootleg series. So it's not like you could have just, it's not like that version existed when they were putting Oh Mercy together and then Bob and Lanois nixed it. Well, Bob nixed it and Lanois had to acquiesce. But that version, so that assumption that I had made over the years, like so many, was incorrect. It's not like there ever could have been an Oh Mercy with the version of this song as we hear on the bootleg series. So I'm a little more forgiving of Bob in that the version that I love so much, the one that I first heard, is you know, it never had a chance to be on Oh Mercy. And again, we'll talk about even a little more about some of the unique things about the bootleg series edition that are very specific to that version. Why do I love this song so much? Well, I mean, first of all, I love that it's Bob at, Bob can be very direct. Bob can be very elliptical. I like both approaches, but I love I feel like with each verse, I just quoted the opening verse and then the second verse, thinking of a series of dreams where the time and the tempo drag and there's no exit in any direction except the one you can't see with your eyes, wasn't making any great connection, wasn't falling for any intricate schemes, nothing that would pass inspection, just thinking of a series of dreams. I love that any one of these lines is, I feel like it's Bob opening a door just a little bit, not all the way. He's not bursting through it like the Kool-Aid man. He's opening it just enough to kind of get a glimpse or a sense of something that's going on. And then the door is being shut, or it can only be open so far. And so you're only kind of getting like a half impression, a vague impression of what even he's talking about or what he's referring to. And there's something about that mystery that I find to be incredibly compelling. By the way, I just quoted the second verse. You'll notice maybe that there is a non-rhyme in that verse. Of course, he sings on the bootleg series version where thinking of a series of dreams where the time and the tempo drag and there's no exit in any direction except the one you can't see with your eyes. Well, drag and eyes don't rhyme. And apparently what happened was a few alternate takes of the song in various forms. And again, I mentioned there is the vocal tracks that I think again were recorded with no band behind them. And so one version of this song, the verse goes, I'm thinking of a series of dreams where the time and the tempo drag. Suddenly the gate is thrown open and you're left there holding the bag. there's the rhyme, drag and bag. But there's another take where he sings, and these are the words on BobDylan.com, thinking of a series of dreams where the time and the tempo fly, and there's no exit in any direction except the one you can't see with your eyes. So there we've got the rhyme, flying eyes. So apparently, again, according to the recording sessions by Clinton Halen, I know, is that when this song was compiled for the bootleg series, someone at Columbia Records jumbled up the two vocal tracks and slotted in the tempo drag line with the one you can't see with your eyes line. So it's just a mistake. It is just an error that these are two different tracks and someone split one set of lines and paired them up with the second set of lines, even though they do not rhyme. And it was the weirdest thing that it took me years. I think it was probably even until I read the book, read Clinton Halen's book in like 95, 96, whenever it came out, that I even noticed that. I remember reading it and being like, wait, what? And I went back and listened. Yeah, he's right. It doesn't rhyme. And again, it's a mistake. And the way you know it was a mistake was apparently Columbia Records issued a bootleg series promo CD early in 1991 that had five songs on it. And one of the songs on it is Series of Dreams. And on the promo CD, it has the correct rhyme. It has the drag and bag lines. And so between that, it seems unbelievable that it would get changed after that. But I guess at some point between the promo series, the promo CD being released, and then the final edit of the song being put on the box set, someone rejiggered the lines and composited those two takes together, which is why you don't have the rhyme. And as I was saying, it took me years to even notice that. And I think that's one of the reasons why, again, I like the song so much, is that it having that non-rhyme sets up an anxiety in your mind, at least for me a little bit, that you don't even notice. It's subconscious. It's just like you don't even really think about that. Like, oh, wait, that line is just sort of hanging in the air because it doesn't meet up with another line later on. It's kind of like what Stanley Kubrick would talk about, that he would put apparently subliminal images in the frames of his films that would go by too quickly for your conscious mind to pick up, but your unconscious mind would, and it would give you a sense of anxiety, and you wouldn't necessarily be able to figure out why. It's because Stanley was cheating a little bit and inserting these images. And so I think that's kind of how it works here, is that drag and eyes don't rhyme. And so that verse just sort of hangs there. And I've never really noticed it, but I sense it. I sense the weirdness of this, of that song, or that part of the song. He goes on, he says, dreams where the umbrella is folded into the path you are hurled, and the cards are no good that you are holding unless they're from another world. And again, it's this sense of mystery that he's got going on, is that things are sort of half mentioned, they're half described, and Bob is letting you kind of lean in and figure out exactly what is going on. And of course, it allows you to fill in the gaps. And I think I think any song, or almost any piece of art or entertainment, but especially for me, Bob Dylan songs, they can work on a couple different levels in that how they hit me. And again, this is something we've discussed over 314 episodes, is that there are songs where he is introducing an idea to you that's brand new. You've never considered this. You've never thought of this. And he's being introduced to you via song. And that's very powerful. And then there's another one where a song, again, we're going to keep talking about Bob. A Bob song is confirming something you already believe. He's stating something that you already believe. You know, you already feel it. And you get sort of confirmation of that feeling. Oh, Bob, at least, or the character in the song, feels the same way as I do. And it's being being communicated. That's very powerful. Then there's this third one. And this is what Series of Dreams does for me, or what it did for me, is it unveiled something in my mind that I didn't know was there. And I hadn't been able to quite give it words until I heard this song. And I've never been a religious person for any organized religion. I was raised Catholic. I had to go to CCD classes Sunday mornings, like a lot of kids my age. I abandoned all that the minute my parents allowed me to, and I never looked back. And so, again, I'm not knocking anyone who does that. I'm just saying it just was never my thing, and I've never regretted that decision. And so I've never had any great sense of belief about anything. I'm envious of people that do, but I just have never been able to have one. Of all the belief systems out there, I guess, the one that seems the most reasonable to me, the most logical, not that the universe is a logical place, but the one that most seems reincarnation, that seems to make the most sense to me. And despite all the chaos of the universe, we do have the rules of science that the universe follows. And so in some ways, the universe is a very orderly place. And so to me, it makes the most sense in terms of the conservation of energy and spiritual side of reincarnation always makes the most sense. And it also isn't helping. My wife is big into that. And we talk about our previous lives, our past lives and things like that. She is convinced that if I did leave a previous life, I worked in a Hollywood movie studio in the 30s and 40s. And I hope so. It sounds like a lot of fun. Anyway, reincarnation has always made the most sense to me, even though the thought of it is kind of horrifying. I would never want to be a child again, even though I look back to a lot of my childhood with fondness, and I'm into a lot of childhood things from my childhood, the comic books and things like that. And I own items from my childhood that have meaning to me. But again, the thought of being a kid again is not, it's just, that doesn't sound super fun. But I remember one time I was out walking my dog, not my current dog Pippa, but another dog that I owned. And we were just walking along this woods, and she started sniffing something very sort of furiously. And I looked down, and I saw in the dirt a very, very tiny baby squirrel. I mean, it had to have been the size of like a, you know, like a peanut you would buy at like a ball game in the shell. I mean, that small. And it was hairless, and it was all curled up in a little ball, and it was dead. And so it was clearly, you know, probably had the mother squirrel had just given birth to a bunch of babies, and that baby didn't survive. It was born, you know, who knows what happened to it, but it was obviously, it didn't live very long, whatever this little critter's life was. It was very, very short. It didn't even have hair. It didn't have anything. You know what? I don't even know that it was a squirrel. It was some sort of critter that you would see out in the woods. But I remembered looking at it and being struck by the idea that whatever electricity ran through this thing, whatever life was in this thing forever, however brief, it didn't get very long. This poor critter didn't really get much of a chance on Earth. You know, how long was it alive? A day, half a day, an hour, 10 minutes? You know, who knows? But I just remember being struck by the idea of, I can't believe that's it. I can't believe it. I don't believe that the universe that creates these things, that creates the life that infuses this little animal with all the feelings that a sentient being has, that's it. This little squirrel gets 5 minutes on planet Earth, and that's it. That energy is just thrown away, and it's never to be seen again. And it's as if it never. Some people get 100 years on this planet, and you know, a turtle can live to be what, 200 years old or whatever. But this little thing got a minute and a half. You know, I just can't believe that. I just can't. So I like to think that whatever energy was in that little squirrel just went somewhere else. Maybe it was born into another squirrel a day later, and that squirrel's out running around to this day or something. But it's the closest I've ever had to any sort of religious belief of just, I just don't believe it. I don't believe that the universe would throw that out with just that little animal just got so little time. And so that's why the reincarnation thing is so powerful to me. And so here's Bob. Bob isn't expressly talking about reincarnation, but to me, that's what the song is. This is a guy, a person, who, for whatever reason and in whatever context, has been given a glimpse into a series of alternate existences, and they come across as a series of dreams. Maybe they're living, you know, they're waking dreams, they're living dreams. Maybe they are literally the guy's asleep and he's thinking of them. But something has happened to where this person is now getting a glimpse, very brief glimpses of their alternate lives. And some of them are more concrete. In the next verse, dreams where the umbrella is folded and into the path you're hurled, and the cards are no good that you're holding unless they're from another world. You know, the umbrella is folded. Well, why would you have a folded umbrella? Well, you've just come out of the rain, presumably. It could be as basic as that. Or I love the line about the cards are no good that you're holding. The idea that the preconceptions that you carried with you in one life don't necessarily translate to the next, or don't, you know, the view this person is getting of this alternate reality can't be perceived or really understood with the mechanisms that they've been using for this life. Maybe their sense of existence, you know, is so different. In one life, they're, you know, a world famous, renowned musician. And in another life, you know, he's a pirate from the 18th century. Of course, I think Bob really does think of himself in that way. And it kind of reminds me a little bit of, if you've ever seen it, the 1991 film Defending Your Life, Albert Brooks. I've already mentioned on other episodes, I'm mega Albert Brooks fan. But in that film, his character and Meryl Streep's character go to the Past Lives Pavilion, where you get to go and see some of your previous lives. And we see Meryl Streep's character was Prince Valiant in a former life. But of course, Albert Brooks's character was like an Aboriginal guy running from a tiger, sort of fitting. And then, but there's another bit where an older gentleman puts his hand on this little glass and he sees his first life. And in this previous life, he is a very fancy little girl with ringlets and a doll and an ice cream. And you hear a voice say, you know, come, darling. And the little girl says, coming, mumsy. And they cut back to the guy and he just goes, what the hell is this? And that the cards that guy is holding are no good because he cannot comprehend that at some point in his previous life, he was this delicate little girl when he obviously is not that. And so I have always loved that tension in the song of the tools you have with you are not necessarily the tools that are going to work in these other lives. They're going to be completely their own thing. And that has just, as I said, I don't really have any sort of religious belief, but the closest I get to, this song taps into that. And I, at the age that I'd heard this song, I would have been, if I heard it in March of 91, I bought this set the minute it came out. I remember going to the record store and buying it. So 91, I would have been 19. And I was long past my Catholic days. But I'm sure I didn't spend a whole lot of time thinking about what my beliefs even were, really. I had other concerns. So this song really implanted that, like it drew it out of me. And that was just immensely, immensely powerful. And the song wraps up with it. He says, in one, numbers were burning. In another, I witnessed the crime. In one, I was running. And in another, all I seemed to be doing was climb. I wasn't looking for any special assistance, not going to any great extremes. I'd already gone the distance, just thinking of a series of dreams. And then after he sings the not going to any green streams, I'd already gone the distance, just thinking of a series of dreams. We get to this, it's not a guitar solo, but there's an instrumental break. And I love that Bob doesn't add lyrics to that. He lets the music just play out. And there's something about that strum, the you'll know it if you ever, if you've heard the song, you know the part I'm talking about where it gets there, where it just builds to this sort of crescendo. And in that space, because Bob is going to come back in again and sing the refrain, I'd already gone the distance just thinking of a series of dreams, just thinking of a series of dreams. But in that like 30 seconds or 45 seconds of just the music playing, as pretentious as this is going to sound, it sounds like all of existence is summed up in that instrumental break, where it's just the swirl of sound, the synths playing, the guitar and the drum, the you know, it's like he lets you, he's presented you with all these little flashing chains of images. And now he's going to let you just sort of sit with it for a minute and let all that swirl around in your head and contemplate it. And to me, it's perfect. It's great. I love that. I love that the song has all these verse after verse after verse. And then bang, we get this sort of summation of everything he's been putting across. And you just have to let the sound wash over you. And every time I listen to the song and I get to that part, like I, my like muscles tense up in a good way where he's that dun, dun, dun. Again, I'm butchering it. But it's just, to me, it's like, it's perfect. It's just perfect. And every time I listen to this song, it brings me back to the first couple times I heard it. It transports me back in time, 30 years to where I first heard it. And it reminds me, and you know, and my belief system hasn't really changed too much in the intervening decades, but it brings me back to that moment. It brings me back to that time of hearing it for the first time and just feeling the impact of what the song was doing for me. And I think I probably mentioned in other episodes, my favorite film of all time. Again, if you could narrow it down to one movie, if I had to narrow it down to one movie, my favorite film is Richard Linklater's Before Sunrise. And we're not even, you know, completely separate from the later films. That was, I've always said that was my favorite film long before he ever made the sequel. And, but that's not a film that I revisit a whole lot. It's not Jaws. It's not, it's a Mad World or White Christmas, some of my other favorites, where I watch those films on the regular. It's a film I watch every so often, every couple of years. It's just not the kind of movie I watch, I'm in the mood to watch a whole lot, but I still count it as my all-time favorite because of when I saw it, the moment I saw it, it was the exact right thing I needed to see at that exact moment. And every time I do watch it, it brings me back to the moment. It transports me back to the 20-something-year-old me that saw it and was so impacted by it. And it hasn't lost any of that power. And that's me. What's why I love this song so much is that it just, again, it returns me to that feeling of, God, I remember when I was thinking about all this stuff for the first time. And I was so young and I was still, my fandom for Bob was in its infancy. I had only been listening to him a couple of years at that point, and all of it was so new. And the bootleg series was so exciting to know that he had all this material tucked away, how much more of it was out there. And so every time I listen to the song, and I listened to it a bunch of times in preparation for this episode, it just, I get lost in it. I get lost in it. And because it seems that it's, the topic is so all encompassing, it's all of existence. It's all of life. I keep saying it's my favorite song. And so after the instrumental, he comes back and he just trades off of them, just thinking of a series of dreams. And it's like a guy who is getting back. He's been given this insight, but he doesn't know what to do with it. He doesn't really know how to process it. So he sort of puts it in the back of his mind and he just goes back. He's sort of like going back to his day, you know, the shruggy, just thinking. I'm, you know, just thinking. He's kind of like undervaluing. I'm just thinking of a series of dreams. I was thinking of a series of dreams, or I'm thinking of a series of dreams, just thinking of a series of dreams. And it's like, well, I almost can't process all. I don't know what I saw. There was an umbrella. I seemed to be climbing. There was, you know, all that stuff. And I don't even know what to deal with it. So I'm just going to move. back on. By the way, I should mention there is an alternate verse, and one of the alternate things, there is an additional verse that did get clipped out, which is thinking of a series of dreams where the middle and the bottom drop out and you're walking out of the darkness and into the shadows of doubt. Great turn of phrase. Wasn't going to any great trouble to believe in. It's whatever it seems. Nothing too heavy to burst the bubble. Just thinking of a series of dreams. Now, I think I'd be perfectly happy with the song being an extra 45 seconds longer. And I like that verse. I don't miss it terribly. I feel like this song is, because it was arrived at so accidentally, as I already mentioned, it's got the wrong rhyme scheme and it's was, you know, added to for the bootleg series release, that it's, I'm like, well, I don't want to touch it. It's song's perfect as it is. So fine. There's these alternate versions with the alternate verse and the other rhymes. All that's good. But I like the one that we like the one that we've got. So yeah, it just, you know, some of my other all-time favorites, like You Ain't Going Nowhere, or Tonight I'll Be Staying Here With You, or Tangled Up in Blue, or God Knows. I mean, I love all the songs so deeply, and they all mean something to me different ways, and they all bring me back to different moments in my life. But Series of Dreams just burrowed itself in my brain, and it has just stayed there all of these decades. And that's why I call it my favorite. That is why I call it my favorite. It didn't hurt that at the time, right around when the bootleg series was released, they bothered to make a promotional video for it. And I remember, this is how long ago this was, there was a show called Friday Night Videos, which ran on Friday nights, surprise, surprise, in the David Letterman time slot, because I don't think he did a show on Friday nights. They made a big deal of it. I remember they were like, they ran promos like, hey, the new Bob Dylan video, which again, times really have changed. And the video is brilliant. I think it's a great way to get inside the song, of just presenting all the different facets of Bob's life. It features kind of, I guess, some early computer graphics, very early computer graphics. There's that startling moment where they manage to seemingly get a shot of Bob looking straight ahead into the camera, and they de-age him right in front of you. And that's, you know, the technology of that was blew me away, that they were able to do it. And of course, there is some new footage of Bob walking around, looking kind of happy, which is fun. And it's a brilliant video. It's one of my favorite videos. I just think it's a great insight onto the song. Although the song is truncated by a full verse. It's only about 3.5 minutes or 4 minutes of the video. But I remembered watching the video in my apartment during my second year of art school. And I was so excited. And I just, you know, back then you saw it once and you had to kind of catch it again on MTV or something, which again, imagine that nowadays. And I did the best I could, but every time I would watch it, I would try and look at all the corners and look at all the little details and like, oh, look, they're running the lyrics to Tough Mama. My favorite line from Tough Mama is down on the screen there. It's being written. It's a video you could watch 1,000 times and keep seeing something new. All the little bells and whistles for Dylan fans. There's the little brief shot of Lenny Bruce at one point. It's just an absolutely terrific way to get inside that song. And it gave the song more import to me, because it was like, wow, they made a video for it. You know, I mean, the idea that this would be like a single or something is really very funny. And it inspired me. The song and the video inspired me so much that when I went back to art school for my third year, I started getting into like a collage illustration type thing. I had gone there to learn to do comic books, and I learned pretty quickly that I didn't want to. Once I saw what the reality of that was like, I realized I really didn't want to do it. And also my skill set just was not up to snuff, at least compared to some of my fellow students. I just was never going to be able to match them. I was already so far behind that I sort of started looking to other illustration styles to express myself. And one of them was this collage style. And one of our classes, our teacher said we had to illustrate a song in comic book style sequential pages. And everyone went to drawing various things. And I said, can I do it on my collage style? And the teacher's name was Stu, said, yeah, sure, go right ahead. And so I did this collage thing where I have a kind of a silhouetted figure with like a white shirt. He's got no features, but just a sort of this black figure walking down this path, and surrounding him in all, on all sides and on top and below and in front are this, are these collage images. And it was just various images that I pulled from magazines and newspapers and paint blobs. And I would write little lyrics on these. I wrote the names of people that meant a lot to me. And I would write quotes from other Dylan songs. I remember I wrote in one corner, "I wish I was a magician," from "We Better Talk This Over" in one corner. And it, to me, it was my way of, I mean, yes, I was sort of cheating and borrowing from the video, but it was my version of the song. And I actually took, I had a typewriter and I printed out the lyrics, typed them out and cut them out in strips and pasted it all around. And, you know, I had a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun and it meant a lot to me. And I brought the 5 pages in and my teacher was actually very impressed. He really thought it was unique and interesting. And it was, to that point, I hadn't really shown myself to have my own kind of unique point of view. As I mentioned, I was always sort of playing catch up with everybody. And here I was doing something very unique. Nobody had really done this before, at least in our classes. And so I was finally showing how I saw the world in some weird way. And so it became one of my favorite things that I ever did. And I held onto those pages for years and years and years. Sadly, they have been lost to time. I think they were at my parents' house for many years and that stuff got thrown away. And I might've been the one that did it. And now I never took a photo of them. This is in pre-cell phone. So I never scanned them. And so they're just lost to the ages. And that makes me really sad. I wish I still had them because I would love to look at them again. Yeah, they're pretentious. And yeah, they're, you know, very navel-gazing as a 19-year-old art student. But nevertheless, they were honest. And they really were expressing a love of the song and the way I saw it and how it made me feel. And so I do wish I had them. But I, that's another thing when I think about the song is I think about those pages and how it helped inspire me to pursue a style of illustration that I felt could express myself with. And then I eventually, you know, kind of kept doing collage type work through the rest of my final year. And I ended up even getting some work as a professional illustrator doing collage. I eventually sort of got out of that style of illustration, but my first professional illustration gigs for some newspapers and a music magazine of all things were collage based. So I have to give Bob credit for inspiring me to pursue this form of work that ended up being very, very beneficial to my life. And so, again, another thing that I owe him. A couple of things I just want to mention about this song. Of course, for some reason, on the end of the bootleg series, they blend the penultimate song, which is When the Night Comes Falling from the Sky, another song that should have made the record. They blend it with the beginning of Series of Dreams. I don't know why they did that. It didn't bother me too much. But back then, I still had a cassette player and I was making greatest hits collections of like my favorite songs to listen to on cassette. And Series of Dreams was immediately on there. And so I remembered having to like when I was pulling it, dubbing it from one tape to the blank tape, I had to like start recording at the exact right moment to where I wasn't catching any of the end of When the Night Comes Falling, but not missing any of Series of Dreams. So thankfully, when Greatest Hits of Volume 3 came along in 1984, it features a complete Series of Dreams. There's no fade in it. You just get the song as it starts. So thanks for that. Live-wise, this song has only been performed 10 times. As you might imagine, it's an incredibly complex song to try and do and probably doesn't really work. I've heard a couple of live versions and it just doesn't have that. Just doesn't have the drama. It just doesn't. I mean, obviously it's got all these overdubs and so none of that stuff is going to be there on any live versions. And there is one time where I haven't heard it, but apparently he did Series of Dreams and then he moves into another song and he plays the wrong song. Like he starts singing a different song than the band is playing and he notices and he mumbles something about that. Like the melody is like the same as Series of Dreams and he got confused or something. And it was apparently like one of the last times he ever did Series of Dreams. And again, this is Clinton Halen sort of surmising that it was that screw up that made Bob just sort of throw Series of Dreams. Yeah, again, who knows, but it was one of the last times Bob ever did it. And it was sort of like, oh, all right, we'll never do it again. So yeah, it's only been performed 10 times. The last one was April 12th in Rockford, Illinois. So it seems like the kind of song that, you know, he's never going to go back to kind of thing. You never do know. And I would certainly welcome it, even if it isn't as, nothing will be good as the Bootleg Series version, but I would love to hear it. But it's just, as I mentioned earlier, it just digs into me so deep in ways that even I can't fully articulate even here. That's one other reason why I was always loath to do this episode, is that I felt like I couldn't quite articulate it successfully. And I wouldn't be doing justice to the song. But I figured now that we're wrapping up, you know, I would try my best. It would have felt weird to not talk about this song as we're wrapping up here. So that is Series of Dreams. That is Series of Dreams. It is my favorite Bob Dylan song. It will probably always be my favorite Bob Dylan song. If Bob finds a way to release a song going forward that replaces Series of Dreams, that would certainly be amazing. He managed to put out Key West on Rough and Rowdy Ways, and I would put that in like my top 10 favorite Bob Dylan songs. The fact that he can still release songs as late as that and they can make my top 10 list after all the competition is just amazing. So you never know. But like I said, I would still say Series of Dreams is my all-time favorite Bob Dylan song. So I guess that's really it. I was always worried that this last episode, where it's just me talking, was going to be kind of anticlimactic. And again, your mileage may vary. But one of the ways I was sort of backing the show up a little bit was to make sure that the last bunch of episodes before this final episode were absolute gangbusters. And so I leaned very heavily towards some of my regulars on this, Pod Dylan's regulars, that I knew would always make for a great episode. And I thought just having one great episode after the next would really be a nice, you know, great. Someone on Twitter said guns blazing, which I appreciate, a really guns blazing way to go out. And so I just want to thank one last time this last round of guests I had: Adam Putzer, Amy Maud Helfer, Roberta Rakov, Jason MD, Allison Rapp, Rebecca Slayman, Melissa Tomczak, Matt Simonson, and Henry Bernstein for all their friendship they've shown me over the years. And they've all been on the show multiple times, and they've always just been absolutely so fun to talk to, and I've always been so proud of the episodes that they appeared on. And so it meant a lot to me that they would all come back one last time to talk about a Bob Dylan song. And it took the stress out of worrying about how the show was going to end, you know, end on an up note. And so again, thank them all. And thank everyone here for listening. You know, I mentioned when I, bunch of episodes ago, when I mentioned that the show was ending, you know, I started the show in 2016. I had no idea of when it might, you know, when it would end. You know, I knew it couldn't keep going forever, but I had no idea of when it would end. And I always felt like it would feel organic when it came time. And this feels like a time, even though, as Roberta Rakov mentioned on Twitter, there's like another, I've covered 315 songs. There's like another 300 songs to do. Yes. you know, as Bob says, he not busy being born is busy dying. And my life has changed. And I feel like this is just the right time to go and pursue other things. And while I deeply appreciate all the wonderfully nice words people have said about that they're going to miss the show and they're disappointed the show is ending and all those things, I know this is the right decision to make. And that said, it's a podcast. You never know. We're not destroying the sets here. It's a podcast, and it can be restarted at a moment's notice. And maybe as my life changes, there will be a time where it feels right to bring it back. I can guarantee the show will never come back in its current form as like a weekly thing. That was an effort that I just am not interested in returning to. But you never know. I mean, they might finally do the Street Legal Bootleg Series sessions. Bob might put out another album. I hope he does. I hope he puts out multiple albums. And if he does that, I will certainly want a forum to discuss these things. And there might be another show coming along from someone else that is going to be taking this format and running with it. And if that is the case, then I would love to be on that show and talk about it. But I, you know, this is, for better or for worse, every single second of Pod Dylan has been under my control. And it's been my forum to invite people that I want to talk to, talk about my favorite body of work in all of entertainment, all of any sort of artistic body of work. This is my all-time favorite. It's Bob Dylan's music. And would I be able to, you know, if Bob releases a new album, would I want to deny myself the chance to talk about those, that? No. So who knows? Who knows? And knowing Bob and how, you know, a trickster god he likes to be, he'll drop a new album 2 weeks after this episode airs, and I'll just look like a jackass. But again, that wouldn't be that bad. But if that happens, who knows? Paul Dylan might come back for some special episodes here and there to talk about something really significant in the Dylan canon, and I will just absolutely need to talk about it. And so you never know. But at least in this current form, the show is most definitely over. So, okay, I've gone on long enough. Thank you all for listening. I deeply appreciate all the kind words and all the attention the show has gotten. Bob Dylan has always been a very, very tiny fish in a very, very, very large pond. So I appreciate all the attention that you've given me over the years. It really does mean a lot. So I guess that's it, everybody. I'm going to wrap up here by borrowing two phrases from the man. I'm going to smoosh them together because I realize they both express what I'm feeling at the moment, but they each didn't quite do it. So I'm going to put them together and steal from Bob and just wrap up with saying to all of you, good luck. I hope you make it, and bless you all with peace, tranquility, and goodwill. Thanks.